it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters. Oh, all over this land.
If I had a song,
if I had a song, I'd sing it in the morning.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is John Cronin, who's a senior fellow in environmental affairs at the Pace Academy for Applied Environmental Studies at Pace University and the Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries, founding director, chief executive officer, and the Beacon Institute fellow at Clarkson University. He has worked as an advocate, legislative and congressional aide, commercial fisherman, professor, author, and filmmaker, and is known internationally for his Hudson River work. He served as Hudson River Keeper from 1983 to 2000, a position that has inspired a legacy of 200 water keeper programs that fight pollution on six continents. John Cronin co-authored The River Keepers with Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Cronin.
Thank you for having me.
And you are a resident of Beacon, New York, and so was Pete Seeger, who died on Monday at the age of 94. He was very much a fixture in your town, was he not?
Pete was a fixture in Beacon. And, you know, it's a testimony to how connected he was with everybody in the community that in the 2 days after he passed away, that Facebook filled up with photographs that people had taken with him. He was, you could see him in the post office, see him in the supermarket, and he was a regular part of the community, working on small community projects and large. And in that regard, he was unique in the world of globally known celebrities.
Well, that was what I thought was so great about him, was that he was a celebrity, but he didn't act like a celebrity. For example, you apparently saw him one time in the middle of the winter on a roadside holding up a sign proclaiming peace against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He hadn't invited the press along. He was just standing there as a lonely citizen making a personal and private protest. That's what I take it is what the beauty of this man was, that he was the embodiment of that old adage, think globally but act locally.
That's precisely what Pete was like. And he shunned the trappings of celebrity and was very wary of celebrity. He used his worldwide reputation as a vehicle for delivering very important messages about civil rights and about world peace and about the environment. But he didn't just do that at concerts, and he didn't just do that in the United States and other nations on a national and international scale. The example you just used, it was very startling. It was a cold, sleety winter day. Where we're on a major highway, we were all driving 15 miles an hour, and I recognized Pete right away because his ramrod posture is recognizable to anybody who knows him. And he had his back to me because he was facing traffic in the other direction. And as I went past him, he was holding up a sign that said peace, and he was wrapped in a scarf with a knit hat. You couldn't make out it was Pete unless you knew it was Pete, and. And he was holding up this sign to oncoming traffic, and he was all by himself. He didn't notify the press. He didn't alert anybody. I parked my car and went over across the street and said, Pete, can I get you a hot drink? And he said to me, no, but I have a sign you can hold. So I stood there with him and held the sign for another hour. But that's what Pete was like.
Again, I'm speaking with John Cronin, who's a Senior Fellow in Environmental Affairs at the Pace Academy for Applied Environmental Studies at Pace University and the Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries, Founding Director, Chief Executive Officer, and the Beacon Institute Fellow at Clarkson University. He's worked as an advocate, legislative and congressional aide, commercial fisherman, professor, author, and filmmaker, and is known internationally for his work on saving the Hudson River. He served as Hudson Riverkeeper from 1983 to 2000, a position that has inspired a legacy of 200 waterkeeper programs that fight pollution on six continents. And John Cronin co-authored The Riverkeepers with Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. But in terms of, I mean, as a resident of Beacon, somebody that built his own log cabin, hewing the wood himself, laying down the foundations, when he started to build his log cabin 65 years ago, the river was thoroughly polluted, the Hudson, to the point where Bobby Kennedy Jr. said that, you know, that boats would come up from the Caribbean so that the polluted water would eat the, you know, the bugs off the hull of these boats. That was how toxic it was. So give me a sense of this great environmental success story. And by the way, people don't realize that Pete Seeger's work on cleaning up the Hudson led to the Clean Water Act of 1972, which he had a hell of a lot to do with getting passed.
Well, if you said to Pete that he had anything to do with getting the Clean Water Act passed, he would have shunned it. You know, he didn't take credit for anything. But it's hard to imagine now that not only how bad a condition the Hudson was in the 1960s and 70s, but also how much anti-environmental sentiment there was in the country. So if back then, and Pete had the idea for the 106-foot Clearwater sloop as a symbol and as an education vessel and as the beginning of a movement on the Hudson River, he had that idea at a time when if you were anti-pollution, you were considered by most people to be a communist or a troublemaker or an agitator. It was very different than it is now, where environment is considered a worthy and an important and honorable cause. A large part of the nation didn't think so. And, you know, Pete had a long history of advocacy and paid the price for it during the communist scare era of the 1950s, when he was blacklisted for his advocacy and politics. So how you have to picture him is as somebody who could not only envision a clean river where there was only a filthy one, but as somebody who was willing to stand up to the slings and arrows of those who would call you names if you were pro-environment, and who was willing to put himself out there as a voice for that movement. In the very shortly after he had been beat up quite badly in the press and elsewhere for his advocacy work for civil rights and peace in the labor movement. So he's an extraordinarily courageous figure. And you know, I spoke at an event a couple of years ago of several hundred people that Pete played at. And I said to the crowd as I was introducing him, I said, I want a show of hands of how many people here were inspired to care about the environment by Pete Seeger. And virtually every hand in the room went up. And that would be true for the Hudson River from its source down to the Atlantic Ocean. He's had that big of an impact. And then the Hudson, of course, has inspired environmentalism all over the country.
And just to give our audience an idea of how hostile people were to environmentalists back in the early 1970s when Pete Seeger started in the 60s, and as a matter of fact, the campaign to clean up the Hudson. Apparently, in the 1970s, a state senator was elected to represent Orange County, New York, with a campaign theme, out of work and hungry, eat an environmentalist.
God. I remember it well. Richard Schermerhorn was his name. He ran on that slogan, out of work and hungry, eat an environmentalist. And you could see those bumper stickers on cars and trucks everywhere in the 1970s. And he won very easily. Now, you fast forward to 2014, and there is not an official anywhere in our region or the state of New York who could get elected with that kind of slogan or attitude. Pete deserves the lion's share of the credit for that huge sway in public opinion, for that critical mass that decided, you know what, the river is as important to our life and to our quality of life as anything else in society. I should add as a footnote that eventually Richard Schermerhorn went to jail. So.
Well, you know, he's probably in that category of patriotism as the last refuge of the scoundrel, right?
I think that you nailed it with that, yeah.
Right. So, again, John Cronin, one of the quiet things that Pete Seeger did for your town and his town, Beacon, New York, was to turn a kind of garbage dump into a riverside park for children, where children today, particularly obviously in the summer, can swim in the Hudson, the clean water that Pete Seeger helped restore and bring about. I mean, that's, to me, that's unassailable. I mean, people are not stupid. They're not retrograde. They recognize good things, don't they? I mean...
Absolutely. And I think that one of the great things that Pete understood about people was that people were inherently good, that people would be moved by smart ideas, and that people would be moved by the river if they had a chance to experience it. And, you know, I started in 1973, and Pete's the person who got me started on Hudson River work as a volunteer, and his had enormous influence over my life. And I remember him saying in 1973, you know, if we all work together, we can clean up the Hudson River. And back then, I thought he was out of his mind. But I have to tell you, 40 years later, after being involved in lawsuits against over 100 polluters and as a lobbyist and as a congressional aide and you know, through as many different kinds of environmentalism as you can think of, there is no truer lesson than if we all work together, we can win against extraordinary odds. And what Pete meant by that, though, was very important to understand. He didn't mean if we will all work together against bad guys. What he meant is we all have to work together. If you work for a corporation, if you work for a nonprofit group, if you're a fisherman, if you're a sailor, if you're a teacher or a student, if you run a print shop, there is something for all of us to do. And to his dying day, this is something he believed in with all his heart and soul and never, ever wavered from it. And that's been a source of inspiration to myself and thousands of people. And what he did with that park is kind of a metaphor for all that. It was a garbage dump. And Pete looked at it, and he saw a park. And he spent years convincing local officials and others that this could be a park and was able to eventually garner a government grant. And now it's one of the prettiest parks in the Hudson River Valley that children and parents use all the time. It's a site for concerts. And at one time, it was a garbage dump. But that's not what he saw when he looked at it. He saw a riverside park. And that is Pete to the core. You know, he can look at something ugly, and see where the beauty might lie. He can look at somebody who perhaps has taken a bad position on an issue or an anti-environmental position, and he can find in that person a quality or a skill or a piece of knowledge that could actually make the environment better. He was a believer, and as I said, and I say over and over again, you know, thousands of us stand on his shoulders, and I think that the big message I've learned in my career, the big idea I've learned in my career, is to hold to that, no matter how discouraging things might be, that good is the direction that things end up going in.
Well, clearly, John Cronin, there's much to be done, isn't there? Look what just happened in West Virginia. The whole town of Charleston, 300,000 people without water for weeks and weeks, and still there's some doubt about how clean and safe the drinking water is. It just shows you, I mean, they were polluting that river forever with impunity. And clearly, the lessons learned from Pete Seeger need to be learned in West Virginia, to say the least.
and all over the country. And, you know, every example like that, like the West Virginia spill on the Elk River, every example like that creates for us a magnifying glass to look at the rest of the nation. And so for the West Virginia spill on the Elk River is a perfect example of that. People wondered after the spill happened, why was it that toxic chemicals were being stored so close to a drinking water intake? Well, take a look around the country. Toxic chemicals and hazardous chemicals and petrochemicals and gasoline and oil are routinely stored next to waterways and routinely transported on train cars that run right next to waterways. There are still many things that we have to face, and the West Virginia spill happened in a way that could have happened in hundreds of places around the country. It was not unique in that regard. So you're quite right. We have a long way to go. And Pete understood that. He understood that always, that there was always going to be work to be done. But think about how the nation reacted to that West Virginia spill. If this was 1970 or even 1975, it would not have been a national story. There would not have been nationwide attention on it. People would not have thought of it as outrageous. It probably would have never have made the news. But that change in public opinion, that wave of public opinion now that says we have to be careful, we have to be concerned that the environment and our health are one and the same, has an awful lot to do with the message that Pete has delivered not just throughout New York State but all over the nation, and others who have been inspired by his message. It's news today because of a heightened consciousness, not just because of a diligent press.
Well, John Cronin, I thank you very much for joining us here today. Again, John Cronin is a senior fellow in environmental affairs at the Pace Academy for Applied Environmental Studies at Pace University and the Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries, founding director, chief executive officer, and the Beacon Institute fellow at Clarkson University. He's worked as an advocate, legislative and congressional aide, commercial fisherman, professor, author, and filmmaker, and is known internationally for his work on saving the Hudson River. He served as the Hudson River Keeper from 1983 to 2000, a position that has inspired a legacy of 200 water keeper programs that fight pollution on six continents. And John Cronin co-authored The River Keepers with Robert F. Kennedy. And we'll go out, John, with Pete Seeger singing about his work, I guess when, when his work was just beginning. The song is entitled Sailing Up My Dirty Stream.
And it inspired me when I first heard it.
Sailing down my dirty stream, still I love it, and I'll keep the dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River will once again run clear. It starts high in the mountains of the north, crystal clear and icy trickles forth, with just a few floating wrappers of chewing gum dropped by some hikers to warn of things to come. At Glens Falls, 5,000 honest hands work at the consolidated paper plant. 5 million gallons of waste a day. Why should we do it any other way? Down the valley, 1 million toilet chains find my Hudson so convenient place to drain. And each little city says, who, me? Do you think that sewage plants come free? Out in the ocean they say the water's clear, but I live right at Beacon here. Halfway between the mountains and the sea, packing to and fro, this thought returns to me. Well, it's sailing up my dirty stream. Still, I'll love it and I'll dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River and my country will run clear.
This is Beam Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another background briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.